Okay, good afternoon. Just wanted to say that the Abu Heef lab uses ants to understand evolution, basically. And ants are quite remarkable creatures. I mean, they make up one-third of the global insect biomass. If you put all humans in one blob and ants in another, and you combine all those blobs, that ants and humans are thought to be comparable blobs. And so they're quite remarkably successful. You find them in almost every ecological habitat. And there's about 15,000 species, meaning they're quite evolutionarily successful for just a single family of insects. And you can imagine it's not only that they're quite successful in terms of species numbers, but you can see this as pictures head on. You can get from antweb.org. You can see the remarkable array of diversity, and I'll talk about that in a second. So we do two things in the Abu Heef lab. We try to understand how evolution in ants has unfolded, and we hope that that will turn back and help us understand how evolution has occurred. And I'll give you two examples of that. So one of the amazing reasons why ants are so successful is because they're remarkably cooperative. And the cooperation among ants is legendary. You have policing. They've invented agriculture and many other things. And on basically the left, you see the ant tree of life. And the red line indicates where the species belongs. And there are three major transitions in ants. The first, you have capitalistic-type societies, right, where individuals, the queen is on the top, the workers on the bottom. They look fairly similar. There, the colonies are quite small. Conflicts are very high, and you can hardly tell the difference between them. There's very high levels of individuality. But then, according to E.O. Wilson, famous Harvard biologist, once you pass what's called the point of no return, where you've lost your individuality, you can see the queen in the middle there, and there's now quite a big difference between the queens and the workers. Colony sizes are much higher, conflicts go down. And that's sort of the second major phase of ant evolution. And in the third phase of ant evolution, even the workers start differentiating, where you see you have these massive soldiers and these small minor workers on the top. So even the worker caste starts differentiating, and there, that's sort of thought to be sort of the pinnacle of ant evolution, where you have things like the leafcutter ants that are remarkably ecologically successful. So the Abu Heef lab tries to pinpoint the reasons why these major transitions have occurred, the genetic steps. And we've made quite good progress over the years. And we collect these ants, of course, all over the world, from Arizona to New York to Florida to Germany to Long Island, as you can see here. Okay, so then, by trying to understand how these major things have sort of unfolded, we try and answer questions that will, basically come back to help understand evolution. And one of these major questions is genetic evolution predictable? Clearly, I don't have time to tell you about this. but just to say this really amazing thing is that we were collecting one day on Long Island. We found these anomalies, these mutant ants. And you can see these are what are called gonandromorphs, where they're like mixes of male and female tissues. They're kind of male, like sort of ant monsters. And half that that head is male, and the other half is female. But what's amazing is we found the exact same anomaly collected in a different species on a different continent basically 70 years earlier. And so is genetic evolution predictable? When you look across all these different species, you find these same mutations occurring. And so there's a clear, a predictable signal. Here's, some more ants that have that sort of monstrous mutation. Mutations aren't random. There is a certain predictability to evolution, and that might give rise to all this amazing diversity. Thank you. Thank you.